1965, and that was seen by some of the parishioners on television. Then what happened when you got back to Los Angeles?
I was greeted by a, or actually not greeted, but I was chastised by a phone call from one of the elders of the church, who said that that he wanted to meet with me that next day, that the congregation was very upset, and that the pastor, the other pastor, he was sure would also want to meet with me.
And this was at Michelinda.
Yes, this is Michelinda Presbyterian. Little did I know that two of the elders were actually had brothers who were growers in Delano, so that there was a definite involvement and an emotional upset and tie, because they obviously identified with their families in Delano and had the grower's perspective, I think. In fact, there was an actual special meeting called to deal with me.
It was a special meeting of the
session? Of the session, yes, called to deal with me. The other pastor was really torn. He did not know how to handle it. He just could not believe it. He was not ready for the magnitude of this upset and response. I had actually taken my day off to do this. I had gone to Delano on my day off so that it would not interfere with, quote, the church's work. And the support I got, however, I received many phone calls. I remember that week, that next morning, I started getting phone calls. The church at the presbytery level was extremely supportive of me and somehow got wind. Apparently, things that I don't know, must have been a lot of phone calls by our leadership and by people in the community who had seen it, wanting to really get me, you know, to nail me and to have me chastised and removed, actually, maybe from my position. Because I did not call the presbytery to ask for help. However, they met, the leadership met at the top level, and the stated...
Who would that have been?
The stated clerk and the... and the paid staff of the presbytery, even
Carol Schuster
literally called me and said that that I had acted appropriately, that this was truly the stand of the General Assembly, that I was acting in good faith and doing what was required of us as good Presbyterians, so that I was certainly to know that I was not out of line in keeping with the mandate of the Presbyterian Church. And I found that extremely supportive because, as you know, Carol Schuster was a conservative. And also I got a phone call from the pastor of the First Presbyterian Church in Pasadena, a rather famous man who went on to be head of the General Assembly, what was his name?
I know who you're talking about.
Yes, a big man in the church. And so that next Sunday also, Robert McAfee Brown was scheduled to speak in the First Presbyterian Church of Pasadena, and he used my struggle and my example as the basis of his sermon in speaking to that congregation, which in effect actually stirred up more people. I mean, there were some real, I had some crank calls, or I mean really crackpot calls, sort of threats of that I was a communist and that I was, that I should be ashamed and a lot of really ugly stuff. I mean, I didn't take it very seriously. I also had newspapers calling, and I was pretty confused at the time and really did not want to make things any worse, so I refused interviews at that time. I just said, And they reported it anyway and told the story, and then they said the minister had no comment, which made it, you know, made it worse almost, so I wish I had. And the other pastor was so torn, not knowing what to do, and he encouraged me not to talk to the press. In fact, I actually made his ulcer worse, you know, and we had to then really deal with that, just between the two of us. We had to really deal about what it meant to be responsible, that he didn't have to answer for me, that I could answer for myself, and that he didn't have to feel that he had to make up for what I had done. In fact, I would hope that he could eventually understand and support what I'd done. And I got the material out from the General Assembly to confirm how wonderful I had been, not actually knowing.
What was that material?
Well, it was from the... It was passed by General Assembly, an actual...
related to unionization, the right for
Yes, the right for farm workers to organize and to be recognized, and that the church gave its full support to that. It was also in the social action committees of the General Assembly, but it was an actual resolution that had been passed.
It wouldn't have been related to the UFW because it was too early for that.
No.
So it would have
no,
been something
more generally
around,
about... It was through
labor.
Our National Farm Worker Ministry, which was called Migrant Ministry at that time, as you remember. Right. So
these were resolutions related to the plight of farm workers?
Yes, right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Especially the right to organize mm-hmm. and be recognized. Those were really key phrases, as I remember. The struggle that went on in my own local parish was one of actually anger and pain. And what I learned, to answer your question, what was it doing to the people and what were they feeling and thinking? For them, what I learned, especially for these rather conservative people in the Pasadena area, it was as if the church, and especially the leadership of the church, their pastor, should never get this involved in acting out what we say we believe. It really is okay maybe to have those pronouncements, because then you're not testing them. They're not tested by a real unknown belief system that they have. I mean, they were not in touch with their real belief system. And I was accused of meddling, and I always thought that was a wonderful word, that, you know, it's like the old joke, you know, as they tell you, you know, too much, and then they say, now you're meddling, you know, before it was okay. And for those who were relatives of growers, I think I began to understand. I mean, they had truly that whole system, and they had bought the system that their relatives had fed to them about the balance of labor and how that, you know, there was no other way they could afford it, that they wouldn't be in a business unless they had cheap labor, and on and on and on. I mean, all that is well documented. The struggle to be in touch with what the church said it believed and to act on it was a major gap between the reality and the practice, you know, and what we were saying. And I was really testing it so that it brought it so close to home that it was just totally painful. It was revolutionary for them, and they couldn't handle it all. I had just stepped over the line too far. And I think the essence of it is that they really, to be a good American was to be a good Christian. I mean, there was really no separation of the value system. And this is what they had learned about being a good American. They'd learned all the systems of prejudice and racism and that I had really just stepped over that line and had just brought it so close to home that they could no longer avoid it. They were being examined by the eyes of the world and the press, and I had brought it right home to them, and they never forgave me. Many of them did not forgive me. They said, you could do that. Eventually, the giving that they did was, okay, you might have the right to do that as a person, but you had no right as our leader, as a minister with whom we are identified, and people know that we're identified with this church, and you are the pastor of this church. You had no right to involve us in that way. That was the unforgivable sin. For me to connect them to this in any way, shape, or form was the part they could not forgive me for and the part they were very angry about, even though there was some growth and some acknowledgement that maybe I had the right as a Christian to practice what we said we believed at the national level and at the presbytery level, and maybe even my own personal belief as a Christian.
But you were involving them. They were getting drug into it and they resented it.
Yes, they really did. They resented the publicity and the, it was two parts, and I really think it was so revolutionary because I had not only involved them in it, but I was challenging the very belief system. They were forced to look at it. They were under microscope as well, but they were forced to deal with it because I had brought it right into the very heart and life of our church and had divided some of the people and some of the families. Mm-hmm. It was a debate in many of the families. Mm. I never dreamed what impact this would have on this congregation.
Well, give me an example of that.
There would be parents, since I was in charge of Christian education and the youth groups, parents literally pulled their youth out of the youth groups. The youth said, no, you know, he's not any different. We know who he is. We want to be a part of the youth group, even though he is leading it and advising it, and we insist on going. So there was separation between, you know, children and their parents, between families where there might be a Republican and a Democrat even. These kind of issues were raised. So in effect, without me knowing it, I provided incredible potential growth and separation, you know, among families. Not that it was permanent or long-lasting, but it did bring so many issues up that literally got discussed in family circles. I raised major issues. A lot of the college students responded, saying we really felt the church was weak and that this church was particularly weak, but based on what you've done and what you've said and how you acted out what we say we believe, you have given us a vital new interest in the church, and we're hopeful and want to be more a part of it. And it's ironic, the youth groups really did grow in number, and the college group really zoomed up in number as a result, I think, of just that there's some life and some activity here and some possible.
I interviewed Alan Grant. Remember Alan Grant? He was the head of the Farm Bureau.
Oh, yes. Oh, do I remember
Alan Grant yesterday morning. And it was a very interesting interview. A very good interview. But the major issue that he raised, that he said upset him, was the issue that the church had abandoned evangelism in favor of social action. And what you're saying is that by acting out beliefs that there were in your situation, there were people who were given new hope for the church and were attracted back to the church.
Yes, not many adults, although some really came alive and supported me and felt that there was some real life in the church. The long struggle with those who were conservative and who were Republican and who had a belief system that really identified being a good American with being a good Christian, there were some minor victories with them, mainly in the area that I mentioned of concession, that I at least had the right to do that, and other people might have the right to act out on their convictions, and that would be okay. They could really allow me to do that, even if they didn't. And that was like one small step, a major step within that church for them to do that and to announce that in front of other people and to say that. I actually won over the woman elder whose brother was a grower. She was a good person, and for her, she even announced how painful it was for her to say in front of the other leadership of the church that she'd come to realize, and she had, this was growth for her, that she'd come to realize that I had the right to do that. And that whatever it reflected on them, I mean, that was just something they'd have to cope with or deal with. But I felt that was one small step of growth, because I was tempted to run many times, but I did not, because I felt I have to hang in here and work with them around this. I'm not going to run, you know, because the pressure's on.
How did the issue continue to be raised after the initial experience of your being arrested was over?
Well, people responded to my action and wanting to know what they could do. It actually stirred up some social activism, if you will, in the congregation. Groups of them would come to me and say, what can we do? This is important. And so I began to get people involved in literally going with me to the markets and delegations, picketing, leafleting, and in markets near where we lived. Well, that was an incredible test. Some of them would do it at a distant markets. Others did not want to do it literally right at home where they could be seen.
Was that starting with the Shenley boycott in December of 65 or subsequently?
Well, actually it did start with Shenley, and then...
S&W?
Yes, yeah. Right, exactly. I remember those product boycotts. The grapes also. And we did... just one small anecdote. We did picket a rather swanky market in our neighborhood. And some of the senior ladies wearing fur coats purposely bought grapes and came out and threw them at us, you know, small little bunches at a time. And it was so funny because of the lack of dignity on their part, you know, that they would feel so angry that they would throw these grapes at us. And that really brought some actually humor and sort of nourished actually the line people. The real coup for...
Give me the years that you were there, because I've lost track.
Okay, I was there from, let's see, 64 to 67.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, what was the coup?
That a couple in the church who had really been moved and inspired really by my action, college graduates wanting to really do something with their lives, decided to go into medicine and committed themselves to working with farm workers and did work in Parlier and for quite a few years before they, you know, felt they got burned out and moved then here to the Bay Area.
Were they working with the union, or
they
were
worked with
something directly with
farm? They worked with farm workers. It was a clinic that they literally set up to work with farm labor. In what's the town near Bakersfield that you hit before? You get to Bakersfield.
For which direction?
Porterville.
Oh, yeah.
Porterville. They set up a wonderful clinic in Porterville. And she left her job as a French teacher and took up nursing so she could assist him in his, what he felt his calling to work. So I mean, I was overwhelmed by that. And they attributed, you know, some of it to me, and I said, hey, you know, you're making your own decisions, and I you're the one who should be praised, you know, for... But that brought other people to an awareness of, and of course the 60s were bringing that out in people. I mean, this was something that they felt was so clear and something they could do something about. You know, that was the wonderful thing about the farm worker movement and the development of the union, was that it felt like it was so clear-cut, and the cause was so clear, and that there could be a real result, there could be a beginning and an end, that there could be real change. Like the Vietnam War was overwhelming, but some, we could do something maybe that would have some results. I think people always needed results. The most touching and the fun part of response on the part of the congregation was the food collection and the food caravans. Timid ladies who would have never done anything like this before would drive carloads of food up to Delano. And over that grapevine, you know, sometimes it was snowing, it would be pretty rough. Pretty rough trip. And in the early days, Cesar would come out and thank those ladies personally and help unload. I mean, and they were just always so touched and so moved that, you know, Cesar really was there to greet them in this little office, you know. And they were always so grateful. So there would be a caravan of cars going up. So that was ongoing things they could do.
Caravan from, just from your congregation?
Just from our congregation. Yeah, wow. To go up. And it changed people. I mean, it was a gift. The farm workers made a gift to the church. I really think that always got undersold. It was never that we're saving them particularly. They really opened up people and opened up doors and opened up the issues. I always used the phrase scales falling from the eyes, you know, when I finally saw what a system can do, just like when we saw that what institutional racism was and that we were all part of it, we saw what economic injustice was and that we were part of that. And so there was really that experience for a lot of people in the church of the Damascus kind of experience, and I think it was because of the farm labor movement and just these really spiritual spirit and attitude of the leadership.
It made it easier for people to identify with
it. It really was a real gift. And they were always so gracious about it, even when we were very do-goodish and benign and whatever.
They understood.
Yes, right.
Our limitations.
I've also been touched by, and I reminded after this incredible effort of Corey Aquino, a woman, to bring the people to that miraculous place where there was not a loss, a major loss of life, but a real victory claim. That in the early days we went up, it was really the Filipinos who first greeted us and who really had a strong sense of direction of where they were going. And Larry Itliong, I remember, coming out and receiving the foods also and being an inspiration to all of us, actually. And I had forgotten about, you know, what a strong role the Filipinos had played in this whole movement.
Yeah, they were the AWOC people.
That's right. But I it's hard to focus on what was happening in the and with the parishioners, but I think that's a very crucial point. I've had many thoughts about it, and I'm struggling with what else I might say about it. I'll ramble on a bit, maybe something more will come. The hardest part was the deacons of the church, who are supposed to be, you know, that group of ordained people who give and who minister unto the needy, were really the hardest on me. They asked for a special meeting with me, and they really wanted to let me have it. And I was greeted. It was in the home of one of the deacons. And
so soon after the arrest.
Yes. And the host said, I opened the door and invited me in and said, sit over there so we can shoot at you. Those were her exact words. And it did have the sense of a firing squad, because they were all literally sitting on one side of the room, and they had one chair on the opposite side of this room in which I was to sit and to answer their questions. And at that point, I said, you know, I mean, it really came to me. I said, what does it mean to be a gracious Christian? This is going to be the real test for me, you know, because I could be really angry and let them have it. I decided I'm going to try and work with these women, because they're very upset and they're very hurt and they're very irrational and on and on. And I don't remember exactly, you know, all the things that were said, but I do remember my attitude of trying to change that situation, and trying to change myself so that I maybe could be helpful, you know. And that's when I decided to hang in there and not leave. I was going to hang in there for a year or two at least, and see if we couldn't grow together around this and learn from it. And I think we did, but there were very small steps. And it maybe helped them deal with some other issues a little bit better, because there were many issues in the 60s.
What exactly happened with the session, Matt?
They were a little more tactful. They raised all of these issues about how whether I'd been responsible. They raised a lot of technical questions, what I had said, and had I done this in the name of the church, which was very interesting. And I said, whether I did it in the name of the church, I am a part of the church, and yes, I did it in the name of the church. I may not have mentioned, you know, our particular Michelinda Presbyterian Church, but it really gave me an opportunity to do some teaching and to say, you know, I have not done anything of which I am ashamed, or of which Jesus Christ would be ashamed, or which you should be ashamed, or the church. And we really had, I think, some time for clearing the air and maybe doing a little healing and getting some things in perspective. I mean, they were pretty upset, because two of them, you know, were related to growers in Delano.
And these were great growers.
They were great growers, yeah. Which I didn't know at all. It was very shocking. I might have had a little second thoughts, but I was pretty naive in those days. I just do what comes along. It was your husband who got me up there, and he didn't go because he was sick, and I went alone on the bus by myself.
He went later.
I mean, okay.
Oh, well, sorry. You want to go first?
No, I mean, I just tend to ramble this way.
Okay, so the session met, and a lot of issues were carefully gone over, and you had a chance to make some useful responses mm-hmm. that build some teaching. And then what was the outcome?
The outcome was that I really had to... I may have been in part defense, but I had to let them know exactly where the presbytery stood on this, and that they needed to know that the presbytery was backing me completely in this. I shared with them that, and that gave the other pastors some opportunity to be a little more supportive of me and to at least see that proper procedure and so on and so forth was done. And there was actually some talk of a special trial for me, but that was more, I think, in anger. They didn't know whether that was legally possible or what it would. That came up later. They tried again to have a trial for me around my involvement with the in the Watts revolt, but it's another subject. And I think that there was a sense of there is protocol and policies and procedures and things that we cannot do as responsible Presbyterians. There, you know, the check and balance and so on and so forth. So they needed to have that all clarified. And in effect, we used it, I think, as a teaching method about people's rights and how the church operates. So it was a test in learning to become good Presbyterians. It was more positive, although I was pretty upset. I mean, I was pretty nervous about the meeting.
Was it like the next week?
Yes, it was. Actually, no, it was within that week, and the deacons were within like
arrested for the first time and in jail, but you had all of right. these things that happened. Yes,
too. I do. Yes, certainly the pain was much greater in the local parish coming back to face that. And there is one point that I did want to make, if it wasn't obvious to you. I actually was the only pastor serving a local church who was arrested. Everyone else was removed in some way, either university pastor or some ecumenical position, but I'm the only one who was working actively in a local church that had to face it.
Yes, you had made that point with me last year, and I had made in fact, I have that already in one of the chapters. Something I wasn't real clear about, how long were you actually in jail?
Just about, well, what must have been about, maybe 18 hours, something like that.
So you were...
I was bailed out by
you
the...
You were put in jail in the morning, was it the morning after? In the morning?
Yes.
And then you were in jail overnight?
It was late morning, I believe, by the time we got, yeah. And then overnight and then out
the next morning.
And it was the Bakersfield Council of Churches that bailed us out. And it was such a joy. There was a very sharp, sensitive leader, and he came literally to us and started working on this procedure, and the churches, Council of Churches money went to support us. And they were repaid by all of our efforts in our own local parish. And my support came from the Presbyterian Interracial Council. They insisted on covering my bail, and they repaid the Bakersfield Council of Churches for my bailout money.
When you were all found innocent, did anybody get their bail money back?
No, not that I know of. I don't know that for an absolute fact, but I did not, and anybody that I know, Roger Boyvie, did not.
So Roger Boyvie was with
me. Roger was with me. We hadn't seen each other for a long time, and Roger came down, and we both said, "What are you doing here?" So we were both arrested, and that was really an amazing experience, you know. I'm trying to think of some other things. I mean, there were some wonderful positive things that came out, and I think in the long run, they reigned. I mean, they were more powerful and survive more than the negative. I don't remember if we actually lost members because of it. There was a lot of angriness and pulling youth out of the youth groups and not wanting me to do certain things that I would have a terrible effect on their children. And people wanting me out. Yes, there was. There was a delegation of 33 people who came to the senior pastor and asked for my removal. I blocked that out. And by that time, I had been able to help him be a little stronger around this. And he said, if you feel that strongly, you should be speaking to Chuck directly and you should be telling him why. I mean, he didn't. It was for him, that was a good step forward, I think. And he wasn't just going to buy in and say, yes, well, maybe we should try and get rid of him or whatever. But he stood up for me the best that he could.
So and, what was the outcome of that delegation's effort?
It dissipated. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could tell they weren't going to. They didn't have the nerve to come and talk to me.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
But they wanted him, the other pastor, to dump me. Or to start whatever process it would take. So you never dream you're going to have that much impact on people or that kind of power. And it wasn't my power, it was the power of what it was saying. It just brought it so close to home. It's something basic. It must be that whole sense of the land. You know, we always talk about how basic, you know, the earth and the land is. And so issues related to that. Must have this incredible unconscious collective symbolism and stuff that really shakes up people.
I thought maybe it had to do with a very basic concern about one's economic.
Oh, well, yes. But I meant even at a more subliminal level, you know. I think that goes on. The basis for our survival is the land, and then the economics related to it. Yeah. No, I think it's. I would agree that it would be an extremely materialistic, mammon worshipping.
Ruth and I need to be back at the convent because
they close the door. They lock the doors.
No, okay. But Ruth is upstairs where she has to go down this long hallway, and Jeanette had suggested it probably would be good to meet you tonight. But if you think of anything else that you especially would want me to know.